I don't have a name for this podcast. I don't really know how many I'm going to do, but I wanted to do something that focused on living in LA in the middle of virus lockdown 2020. And so I felt that you would be a great person to start with. So why don't you introduce yourself? And then everyone here can introduce themselves in case they chime in or laugh so I can at least know who's who vocally.
My name's Haley, and I live in Los Angeles. I am involved in, I guess, the same scene as you, like the punk rock music scene, and I'm in law school. I'm an activist and I'm an organizer, so I have some input from kind of different viewpoints, I suppose.
Sure. And we have, who else is here, please?
AJ Morello. I live with Haley, and I'm a sound mixer.
I'm AJ's brother, Nick, and I work in entertainment.
So there's four people here with, you know, clearly, four people, including myself, that all are very different, living very different lives right now, even though we're all kind of living the same way. So Haley, in your honest opinion, has there been any cases of cabin fever since you've been sort of locked down? And, you know, you can go out, but.
Yeah, for sure. I think that if I had my choice, I would probably work from home more often than not. I would go to school and use the resources there when I had classes. I have class in the morning most days, and then I have a second class in the afternoon most days. And then I have a variety of things that require me to do work on campus to get credit. And so I would go in for those things that I had to do, but I would rather come home and study anyways, because AJ is gone a lot of the time and our space is pretty expansive here. And then I can be with the dogs too. So I can kind of just like work on the couch or do something. So that part didn't change. But the minute that I learned that I couldn't do that anymore, all I wanted to do was not be in this house, you know? But like I realistically probably wouldn't have studied much different in my spare time. Law school is really self-directed. So aside from the times that you're actually in class and need to be present, most of what you do, you know, you get one grade at the end of the semester based on one single exam in most courses. So you're not getting feedback. Most of it's just conversation while you're in the classroom. But the study part probably wouldn't have changed much, but as soon as it did.
What do you miss most then about the school experience? Like, how is your school experience today or now changed from what it was a week and a half ago?
So first and foremost, I'm a huge extrovert. And so I really thrive on connection with community, with people in my classrooms, with my professors who are brilliant. And so not having that kind of back and forth when we're talking about theoretical concepts in class, it's not the same in a Zoom classroom. He asks questions. It seems like we're all a little hesitant to jump in and answer because you cut people off. Or some of our professors don't necessarily know how best to be able to view us and then also see like the hand-raising function to call on people. So just kind of the things we take for granted in social interaction when we're in person, they're not as fluid when you're in a Zoom classroom.
I know that with house party and with Zoom, to me, I can multitask. Like, I can have the radio on, the TV on, and have a phone conversation or whatever. It doesn't bother me. But something about Zoom and house party, I want to take my phone and throw it across the room.
Because for sure, that is real. Yes, 100%. Absolutely. I have a hard time with it too. I do have a diagnosis with ADHD. And so I already have a kind of hard time focusing. I can't have music on when I study. I can't have distractions. It's only really been this week that AJ's been home too. And we don't really distract each other, but the dogs will come in and start barking at something. And there's always something that I'm like fidgeting with. It's difficult. It's more difficult for me to focus on it than it used to be. And I'm mostly contained and can obviously succeed and do the things I need to do to get there. But this is definitely a challenge I wasn't expecting. And there is something to a physical environment that you go into where somebody is holding you accountable on the other side individually. Like, although a professor is looking at 90 students in a classroom. They're set up in a way where he can see everybody. He can walk through, the middle of the class and things like that. So you're all kind of always ready to be called on at any time. I feel like we can kind of not have that same sense of engagement, but that doesn't keep us as accountable either. We're more accountable when we think we could be called on at any moment. With this, you can't even see some of us. And then we also have the challenges of, depending on where you live, like, we're really lucky. We have a lot of space. We also have really fast internet prior to COVID, right? Like, we have fiber here. I should have a super speedy internet, but because our house is shaped the way it is and it's really long and probably has lead paint all over the place, we don't get very good internet up front, which means that we have to be back here. But when everybody's home now and everybody's tapping that resource and it's super flooded, our internet speed's really slow in some places, and we're paying like a good amount of money for really fast internet. What about people who don't have the same access to those resources and they're trying to compete on the same level? Like, law school's super competitive and it's judged on a curve. The curve sets the grade. So that means the person that does the best sets the high score and everybody else is compared to it. But there's so many variables that we can't account for with not knowing if somebody has a situation. Like, before AJ and I lived together, I lived in a tiny spot. And if somebody else would have been in that space with me, there's no way I could have focused on school. It wasn't quiet enough. I'm also, because I'm in law school, I participate in legal clinics. I have clients right now that are going through real life cases that need to be resolved, even though I work for an immigration clinic. So even though the government's kind of shutting down some things, these things must continue. But people with limited access to resources, the immigrant community especially, because they're not really being picked up by any of the relief that we're seeing, communicating is really difficult. Getting in contact with each other, making sure that we can get on a call at the same time, that we both have internet. If I need you to sign something, you don't have a computer, you don't have a printer. How do I get that to you now? So it's been interesting to see how COVID affects people on a socioeconomic level. The people who are better off socioeconomically, we're seeing getting tests. We see famous people getting tests all over the place. But very much on a very real level, the workers that we're seeing that are giving our like life-sustaining services right now are making shit for pay and probably don't have health benefits and are delivering shit to our strangers' doors or driving you around or doing any of those things. But they're the most essential workers we have. They are what is keeping us alive right now. And so that's been really eye-opening.
What have you noticed with your clients, with your work, without getting specific? Has anything changed now that people are, if you have a situation where, you know, clients can't be with certain people in their lives, now they're maybe with them a lot or a lot more, having to deal with parents who aren't living together with kids and all that sort of thing? Has anything like that now changed immediately?
Speaking generally about my clients, I think there's a bigger fear in the population. A lot of them do service work. So they were some of the first people closed, bars, restaurants, things like that. But the difference between people like you and I who can easily apply for disability or something else because we can prove our identities, for undocumented people, that's not the same. They cannot fill out unemployment. They've paid into the system. A lot of them have tax ID numbers, right? They're not social security numbers. It's not fraudulent. It's what they're supposed to do. So they pay taxes in, but they can't file a refund. Like, they can't get these resources that we can get if we're unemployed all of a sudden. So I think the level of fear amongst those populations is significant, on top of the fact that because people who come here and lack resources often have to figure out ways to live in ways that maybe we wouldn't necessarily have to consider. I think there might be situations where there's more people in a space than can be properly quarantined if somebody gets sick, right? If you have a couple more people than you do bedrooms in your house, how do you do that if somebody gets sick? If you have kids, I think that's one of the other big challenges we're seeing is a lot of people in law school do programs that are, you know, half day or evening classes or something to accommodate their lifestyles, which include taking care of elderly family members, which include taking care of their children, whatever. And now they're the teachers as well. So I've seen some of my friends doing really cool things, people with like really immaculate education backgrounds and certifications who have gone to school forever to be able to teach like special needs students or students who have gone through really traumatic experiences that make it difficult to learn, offering to help people in their community by helping provide virtual classes for those students for free. Obviously, the space for those folks who are doing that sort of work is very limited. They can take on a very limited number of students that way. And that, again, relies on the person receiving the benefits having an internet connection that will allow them to receive that benefit, even if it's free. I have seen a lot of resources, though. I know that there are things for, say, foster youth, where they will offer you 3 months of free internet. I got a resource about that today. So I think there are a lot of people stepping up, but I think it exposes a huge flaw in our system, which is that we rely on the kindness of people to step up, these mega, mega rich people, to have some charity on people and step up and make some masks for free. Like, we shouldn't be making a profit off of those things. We see this huge flaw in our socioeconomic system that we really need to address.
As far as getting away from, well, you've been sort of sequestered anyway from social activities because of school and because of work, right?
Yes,
but
very much.
Now that you are forced to be sequestered because of school and work and now this virus, what do you miss or what do you wish that you could just spread out and do like right now or tonight or tomorrow?
I think the most frustrating thing is realizing that we were not prepared. Like, AJ and I did not think that we needed to rush out and stock up on things like flour. AJ bakes me delicious sourdough bread loaves all the time, and I cannot get my hands on flour at this point. I wish I could just go to the grocery store and like get what I needed and that people would stop panicking. They're going to restock. Like, and also I think one of the most frustrating things I've seen when I go out, I can brave those crowds. Like, it doesn't stress me out super bad because I like human interaction. So I like being able to tell people like, thanks for being able to work today so that we could come and get this shit, and like having that communication with another person. So I don't really mind like going and waiting in line and like talking to the checkout person or whatever. I just, there's been a lot of like crazy rude people. Like, I went to Kaiser the other day to just pick up a prescription, and a guy who was saying that he was very susceptible to the virus and was there to pick up a prescription while these, you know, people are working to help us. And very few people need to go in and get prescriptions. It's only things that can't be mailed, right? He goes in, he doesn't have a mask on, he has a cough, and he's just, like, coughing all over the place and not covering his mouth. And this lady who's behind the counter tells him, like, sir, can you please cover your mouth? We can give you, like, a face mask, whatever you need. And he starts shouting that he's super susceptible and he didn't do anything wrong. There's nobody close to him. Like, what was he doing? And she's like, well, you're coughing on the counter and, like, things that people are going to touch and buy. And he was just, like, being – he asked for her supervisor and, like, called him up and just, like, bitched about it. And so the first thing I said to her when I walked up was just, like, thanks for working today. Thanks for being here and risking your life and your family's life and people who are immunocompromised that you know. I'm sorry you have to go through that shit. That's fucking crazy. Cover your mouth. Wash your hands. What is wrong with you?
So my roommate got a credit card or something to where he had a limit that was raised to, I think, $500. So he, when he was still driving for Lyft, because the minute the city was shut down, the Mayor Garcetti shut it down, he returned the car that following Monday because that was it. There was nothing more he could do because, you know, there were no one going to be out. He went to Ralph's and bought a lot of toilet paper, like just on a whim.
Does he want to share some? Because shit is hard to come by now.
Like, stupid luck, right? So he bought all this toilet paper, and it was just, I couldn't believe that with this stupid, dumb luck that he went and bought it, because normally we don't really keep, you know, no one really stocks up with cases of toilet paper.
Yeah, and it turns out coronavirus has nothing to do with toilet paper.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
So this is my funny story. I want to know if you have a funny story to with my funny virus story. But so for some reason, and I don't know why, because I always shut the lid, not because we live with girls, but because the Seinfeld episode where Jerry drops a toothbrush in the toilet I'm always afraid that, right, something is going to fall in, my phone, whatever. So I usually have the lid shut. Lid's not shut. I pull out this roll, brand new roll of toilet paper, and no! I fumble it, and it just dumps right in the bowl, soaking wet. And I'm just looking at it. I'm like, you motherfucker. Picked it up, threw it in the trash. That was street value, $100.
Easy.
So do you have a funny virus story or something that is funny that has happened that certainly made you laugh that maybe wouldn't? A guy running down the street with a sword. I don't know anything, you know?
Nicholas, what do you think?
The funny story?
Mm-hmm. I feel like you're better at those than I am. Sure, only thing I can think of is not funny. But apparently my hot water heater is broken today. So that's dope.
Well, that guy that was licking the packages for Amazon, I feel like that's hilarious. Like, that was
we put that in our chat.
Go-to. He's like, I'm going to lick this cardboard, which is envelope times 1,000. It's disgusting. Like, that was his go-to.
What are you talking about? The rest of us were in this chat.
Well, okay, you weren't in it, but it's the...
Yeah, that was the point.
Dude, like, spitting and licking.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Amazon guy. Yeah. Yeah, he's like, they're like, it's ring footage of this Amazon delivery guy, like, dropping off a package and then just, like, licking it, hawking movies on it.
That's not funny. We shouldn't be laughing. I read that they were going to make that a fucking terrorist.
Yeah, no, that's really not funny, but you know.
Did you see like the viral thing that went around when it first started of the lady getting into an elevator in like China, and they have tissue up on the side so you can pull a tissue out to push the button. She pulls a tissue out of the box. She pushes the button she's going to. She puts her fucking tissue back in the tissue box. And then begins to spit all over the buttons.
Oh, my gosh.
It was when I realized that there are people in the world that are just so horrible. Horrible, there's no redemption.
It makes the people that are drunk after 3 days of punk rock bowling seem completely normal. Completely normal and rational, you know?
I don't know what you're talking about right now.
So do you miss like...
Oh, punk rock bowling. Yeah.
I know.
I was nominated for Punks for Humanity.
Right.
I was so excited.
Speaking of punk rock bowling and things that have gotten canceled, that is a social fun activity. When I saw that you were nominated for something related as a humanitarian recognition that was celebrated by punk rock bowling, I was like, this is great. And then all of a sudden, yeah.
Yeah, that's how it felt. So that's kind of been my experience with COVID. I went on this trip. So I'm in this program called the Moot Court Honors Program at my law school, which is a program that's on a lot of law school campuses. And it's essentially like pretend arguments in front of a fake Supreme Court on issues that will likely be heard by the Supreme Court in the next year or two. So it's essentially a way for law students to get out there and advocate their arguments for these things, and then eventually they get heard and we find out whether or not we were right. So I practice super hard. We get a problem dropped. The way it works is a website, like, for the people who monitor it, drop the problem, like, and it's a fact pattern of, like, maybe 40 pages. So you read through it, and they send you an assignment. Are you on one side or the other side? This is what you're arguing. And then you spend about 2.5 weeks doing massive research and writing and putting together a fake Supreme Court brief to submit to this competition, right? So initially when this program started, I was part of a 3-person team, which meant I only had to do oral advocacy. Somebody else did the writing. I helped a little bit with the research, but my skill set was really going to be getting in front of this fake bench and arguing our side. And the way that they progress is they flip a coin for which side you're on. So you have to be able to do either side as the oral advocate. So in December, we find out that because of complications, our team has been narrowed to a 2-person team. And now I'm being asked to help write the brief. And I'm going to argue. And my other partner, who is just going to write the brief previously, is also going to argue. So we're like, okay, huge shift. We spent about 2.5 weeks writing this brief.
Explain what a brief is for those who... don't.
So a brief is something that you submit when you're in front of a appellate court. An appellate court is what happens if you get a determination in trial court that you don't like and you want to challenge. And there's 2 levels of that. Essentially, there's an intermediate court that can make a decision, which is what we heard with like the ACTA decision or ACA decisions in Arizona. That's the Obamacare, essentially. Arizona just heard a case on that made national news that they're expecting to go to the Supreme Court, right? Same thing. So here we're past the intermediate level. We're at the high court. And so we were doing a medical marijuana problem was what we were assigned. So we do all this research. We write this brief. Everybody that goes through the appellate process has to write a brief for their client. So each side submit one. They both get graded in this competition on written basis, and you get a point going into competition with that. And then you're in front of an actual panel of judges that are acting like a mock Supreme Court, but they generally are people from the program, also like local trial court judges, and sometimes they'll get Supreme Court state judges to come in and judge us. So it's a really good opportunity to get your name out there. It's also a really great opportunity if you do well to meet people who might be able to help you get into judicial clerkship positions post-bar, which is what happens after you graduate. And so we fly into New York and we land, and I text the person that's in charge of our team and I tell them, hey, we're in the cab, we're on our way to the hotel. And they call and they say, hey, how's it going? And I was like, hey, it's good. Yeah, travel was great. It was crazy. There was nobody at LAX. This was March 4th. We fly in. Nobody at LAX. It was crazy. We got there in the morning. Like, I've never not seen traffic pulling up to my terminal. So we land. And then I realize, oh, your tone doesn't sound great. What's going on? She's like, well, we're going to figure it all out. But competition has been postponed. And I was like, what are you talking about? So apparently that guy in Rochester, New York, who was the first like patient zero in New York, came in contact with a student who went to the school I was competing at. We were staying in Times Square and we were competing in Manhattan at New York Law School. And so they determined that Tuesday night, we flew out Wednesday morning really early. And around 2 o'clock their time Wednesday, they sent out an email saying, out of an abundance of caution, we're canceling the competition for this week. We'll reschedule for 2 weeks. We're going to sanitize. We're good to go by Thursday night. But just to be safe, 2 weeks out, because we know you guys all have to get back here. And so we're like, what are you talking about? In 2 weeks, it's going to be exponentially larger. Like, why would we come back for that? There's not a fucking chance. And so we spent 2 days in Manhattan. We did get to go see To Kill a Mockingbird, but we got sent back and we're planning to go back in 2 weeks if they were going to do it. And then about a week later, found out that they're canceling. And then shortly after that, that was spring break. So we get an email from school during spring break saying, you're not coming back to school. You'll get an extra 2 days of spring break to acclimate to online studying. You're going to be using Zoom. Use those days to get acquainted with it. And then we're restarting. And so we started classes via Zoom Law School that Wednesday coming back. And then shortly thereafter, we found out that our competition had been canceled altogether. But one of the more disappointing things, however, totally put into perspective, because they have now canceled graduation for the class that is graduating this year. And I cannot imagine how those students feel after putting in so much work.
Oh, absolutely. How was To Kill a Mockingbird?
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. So I've never been to Broadway. I've never been to a play. I went to like vaudeville things with my grandma when I was a kid in Moore Park. Like,
yeah, like high
a bunch
school.
Of like
yeah,
high
yeah,
school yeah, kids yeah. doing
right.
Like Grease. Yeah,
right.
Totally.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they're super into but I've never been to a Broadway. I had never been, and it was just absolutely amazing. I cried at part of it. Like, I bought the book as soon as I got home to reread it because I hadn't read it since I was a kid, and there were so many things. Like, it was really funny.
That's one of my favorite movies, and I've read the book. I have the second book. I don't know if you know that she wrote a second book before she died.
Mm-mm.
That's the only other book she wrote.
I watched the movie when I got back. Very different from the play. The play was super funny. They had so many great spots. It just had people in stitches, but it was so emotive. And I looked over at my partner who I'd practiced for the sing with. So, of course, we're a little bit disappointed just in life at the time and probably a little bit more emotional than we would normally be. But both of us just like tears in our eyes. Like, are you kidding? Oh, my God. It was so good.
So we mentioned punk rock bowling. So talk a little bit about that.
So I've been going to punk rock bowling since I was too young to go to punk rock bowling. I started going to punk rock bowling when AJ and I met that year, actually. I think I was like 18 and I had a fake ID and went to punk rock bowling and got so drunk I passed out and pretty sure I broke my hip. had this massive black and green and yellow bruise on my hip for like 6 months. But it's the best time in the whole world. It's where all of our friends get to get together and come around from all over the place and see each other. Like, we see so many friends bowling there, as you know, about when did we start West Side Bowling League? That must have been like 10 years ago, more?
I'm not 100% sure, because it started 95, 96, I think we started bowling.
No way.
Yeah.
Well, not the actual West Side Bowling League. Like, when we came back and we started West Side Bowling League, it must have been like 2007-ish, but it was like Sean, Mark, Sharky, me, April, Mikey, Giselle, a few of the people that would like get together for Christmaka at the time with the Stearns.
Right.
They always throw a big party around Christmas. And so we started talking about, like, you know, we go to this thing every year and we're shitty bowlers. Like, why don't we, like, invest some time in it and, like, learn how to bowl better? It turns out after 10 years, I am still a really bad bowler. But we started, it's super true. We started it in Mar Vista, at Mar Vista Lanes, coming back from a punk rock bowling high, where we just decided we wanted to keep having the party all year and also figure out how we could win some money. And so we took over bowling alleys with punk rock music, and then that eventually turned into the Gutter Punks. And when Mar Vista got sold, we moved to Pins, and now I hear y'all are at Corbin.
Yeah, Corbin.
That's way too far away from where we started. I can't do that. But also I hear that there's not as much punk rock on the radio waves, so
yeah, but
not really my thing.
It's better, but
I like the people.
So this year for punk rock bowling, they recognized you. So talk a little bit about that and what that means, and
so
also
I think,
with the cancellation also, or the postponement.
I mean, the postponement bums me out. I'll start there, only because, like, I know they had to do it, but they're redoing it in October, at which point I will be full-fledged in my third year of law school, and I have no idea what my availability will be to be actually able to go. I didn't go last year because of school. I was starting a new job and it was just like too crazy. But this year I had a little break before I start my clerkship. And so I was really excited to get out there and see everybody and like do the damn thing. I thought it was really cool that they started that a few years back before I started law school. I reached out to Sean and Mark and asked them if I could like table a show, like a club show or something. And it kind of like fell off and got lost in the mix because there's so much shit going on. But I had also reached out to a bunch of touring bands that would come through Los Angeles. So I organize a lot with a bunch of different groups, one of them being DSA LA. And actually the way that I got involved with DSA LA was at a Joyce Manor show that was at the train station in downtown LA. I went there and they had a table for DSA. And they had all of this like register to vote and like all this great information. And it had never been consolidated in a place where I was like, well, I feel free to approach this and like talk to somebody about these views that I have and these things that I want to do. And so I was so enamored with it, I immediately joined. And I reached out and was like, how do we get involved? And also, like, the thing you're doing with punk rock, like, is that an organized thing? How do we do more of that? Because the way I got really involved in politics was growing up in punk rock music. So, you know, I grew up in LA. I have a lot of friends that fight Nazis and are, you know, they were the leftist sharps before there was like a whole contingent that has a different name and things. But like, that's what we did, right? But we just showed up at those things that meant a lot to us when it came down to like fighting racism in our scene. But there was so much more that we were interested in, and there were so many things that impacted the people in our scene. Like, our scene is heavily Latino and has a lot of people that are undocumented in it. And it seemed to me that we could get rallied around these things like fighting Nazis. We could get rallied around the things like having a super corrupt LA city council. Like, we could get involved in immigration. We can stop ICE from being here. Like, we have people power. We're anti-establishment. Why the fuck aren't we all organizers? Like, burn the shit down, right? But it's also why I think I went to law school, is I felt like I didn't know enough to be able to adequately fight back about what I thought was oppressive or corrupt or wrong in our society. And without having a footing that really understood civics and how politics work and how elections work and how mediation works, I didn't feel like I had a strong footing to talk about it. And it made me feel a lot more qualified to have those conversations with people once I knew what the fuck I was talking about. And so, because I've always done well academically, I figured that was like my benefit. I should take that privilege and run with it and see if I can get into law school and figure out how we can empower people like us to take over the city systems. Like, we should be those people in government. We need to be on the LAPD civilian watch teams, right? Like, there's so many of us that already have those beliefs instilled in us because we grew up listening to music that, like, essentially indoctrinated us in it, right? Like, you didn't know the lyrics of those Bad Religion songs, but once you looked them up, like, that's what that shit meant. And so I started an outreach when I joined DSA by reaching out to essentially all of my friends who were in traveling bands and asked them that when they came to Los Angeles, they gave me a spot at their shows where I could pass out information about how to get involved in the community. And we did that for about a year until I started law school. And when I started law school, a lot of the connections kind of got lost because they were organic friendships that I had built through the years of being involved as opposed to something that could kind of be handed off to other folks. But it's something I'd really like to get involved in. And I remember talking to Sean and Mark about it. And there were some issues just because it was Vegas and like setup and time, and like having people and flyers and getting it all done. But when I found out they were doing that, I was so beyond stoked because I think it's such a worthwhile thing to honor people for doing because it's super selfless and a lot of us fucking do it. Like Sidewalk Project is run by Soma Snake Oil, Fat Mike's ex-wife, but also like a fucking celebrity in her own right and one of the best-hearted people I fucking know. She's out there every day making sure that there's food and there's resources for people who aren't even giving the same information that we're getting. Like, they don't know how to be safe. They don't know there's a virus. There haven't been state agencies who have gone out and talked to them. What they're coming and doing when they visit Skid Row is they're stealing their tents and they're throwing them away. That has changed over the last few weeks, but it has changed because of people like the Sidewalk Project and DSA LA and LA Can and Ground Game LA, who are activists who every single day go out and fight for the rights of other people that don't affect them, but they understand that the government's not going to do it for them. And like, what the fuck do you pay taxes for if the government's not going to do that? Like, that's why you pay taxes. They're only powerful because we give them power.
So when you were nominated, what was that day like? Who did you hear about it from first?
I heard about it from one of my best friends. Her name is Jen. And her and AJ nominated me. Woo woo! And they submitted statements that kind of just talked about what I had done for the last year, which was super cool. So I was, like, super blushy because it was cool for somebody to, like, honor me for that. I get those kind of things for school, which is really awesome. But I do those things knowing the outcome, right? Like, I know if I volunteer, I'm going to get volunteer hours, blah, 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 blah. But it was really neat to be honored in a community that I cherish so much and that I feel instilled the values in me that I have. Like, the only reason that I think that we buck the system or that we figure out how to work within it or do any of those things are from listening to fucking Anti-Flag and everything else I listened to growing up, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Do you ever feel that... I find it like when I go to shows now, almost there... When I went to shows when I was younger, there was always like either Food Not Bombs or maybe it was the type of shows I went to, put it that way. Not necessarily like hardcore shows or whatever.
PC but punks.
There was always like, you know, an aspect to them that had someone there offering that information. And I feel that over time, I noticed it less and less. Do you feel the same way?
It did. And then when I saw that at that Joyce Manor show, I was like, this is what we need to bring back. Because it used to be there, right? It was always at, like, propaganda shows. There's always, I can't remember the name of the publisher right now, but there's a...
AK Press.
Thank you. AK Press. they're super dope. They actually donated a bunch of really rad shit to a fundraiser I did for foster youth in reproductive justice. I'm a huge reproductive justice advocate. And talking to AK Press and seeing what they do, and they're always like, I went to a National Lawyers Guild convention in Portland last year. AK Press was there. So it was every other, like, lawyers organization you could imagine for activism, but then there was AK Press. Like, punk rock has a place in every single piece of that. And I felt like being in LA with so many undocumented folks here and so much gentrification and so much just, like, mixing of different affluence levels and such crazy disparity in income and, like, you know, we have more empty houses than we do people sleeping outside and dying because it's cold. punk rock just felt like it needed to be there. It's like low-hanging fruit. These people want to fucking riot. Give them a reason to. There's plenty.
Yeah, I'm afraid that's going to happen one day. We'll wake up in L.A. Well, now, like, people are going to get cabin fever.
Well, I mean, I'd be really stoked if it was for the right reasons and not to score, like, free shoes. You know, if it was, like, right now we're looking at a Democratic Party who wants to elect Joe Biden while everybody is singing the policies of Bernie Sanders. I saw Alyssa Milano, whatever her name is, today post that it was, like, immoral for Bernie to still be taking donations. As we're watching a guy who's been accused of rape, who fucking is super fuddy-duddy and just, like, not the best candidate to take him on, embrace policies so short-faceted that he's like, yeah, we need it for this fucking crisis. What do you think's going to keep happening? You think this is the only time we're ever going to see a virus like this surface, or do you think this is the first time we're going to see a virus like this surface?
It's more depressing to me. I'm more depressed with the current state of national, international politics.
I can't even.
Local politics already stresses me out, right? But the national politics, I'm like, you've got a loudmouth, belligerent New Yorker who is very familiar to me because I went to school in New York. He's like some bro frat guy, right? That's just annoying. And then you have...
And dumb as the day is long.
Right. And then you have, on the other side, you have, you know... Everyone's pushing Biden. They're overlooking what Bernie Sanders, everything that he's doing, and they want it. They're for whatever reason they're trying to push this Biden on everybody, and then you're just like, but he gives you too many news clips that you're just like, what is he saying? Why are you saying it? I don't get it.
I mean, like, ultimately, I'll vote for whoever the Democratic nominee is because that is. Whatever, but I think we're making some huge missteps, and I think they're very reminiscent of how we got Trump elected in the first place.
Right. Again, it just goes back. But so, you know, then I'm like, okay, the local elections for me are what matters, that really will affect me more so on a day-to-day basis. And so then I start, you know, when I get my ballot, I will not vote for the incumbent city council person because he's a piece of shit. At least mine is. But it doesn't matter. Somehow they're still there. Like, it's like, who are voting for these people? You know,
Whole thing just feels a little bit like a circle, right? Like, well, we got to get money out of politics because ultimately you only have money to run if you have money to run. So then you're going to vote out the incumbent for the idea that maybe this next person comes in and they're better, but we don't even know what they have. How did they have money to run? Like, who are they? What did they actually stand for? I don't know what it means when you say that you're a businessman. Like, fuck you. I heard that some guy changed his name legally to Judge so that his name would be Judge on the ballot to convince people to vote for him.
Judge.
It's ridiculous.
That is kind of funny.
But also, like, we can all go run for local office. We can all go sit on water boards. We can look and sit on, and, like, they're not paid positions, most of them. But that's how you get involved locally. Right now, you know, there's a bunch of major corporations that are coming in and sitting on our water boards because they want to bottle our fucking water.
Yeah, exactly. And then I know that in Silver Lake, there was a drag queen that actually got on the ballot and was running for a shift's position or his seat and wasn't anywhere near it. In vote count, but I think was near it enough to force there to be another election, you know, in the fall. Like,
yeah, that's what we have with with DA Lacey right now. She just got into runoff. We need to vote her out.
It's just, it's, you never know what's going to happen. That's the thing. It's like, you're just like.
Well, do you remember when Jack Grisham ran?
Like, I still have several shirts.
I have the shirt, right? Grisham ran. That was when
Coleman.
The pink Corvette lady.
Angeline.
Angeline ran.
Mary Carey.
It was one of the first elections I could vote in.
Mary Carey, whose dog that I used to walk, and I'm still friends with her. The whole thing is, I don't even try to think about it. It stresses me out.
I mean, I think the best thing that's come out of this is there has been a network of mutual aid being built across the nation. I'm obviously a lot more involved in Los Angeles. It's where I live. It's where I grew up, kind of suburb, but same difference. So still, I'm very involved here, but I know that it is becoming a national thing, and it's really cool to watch people step up and figure out how they can go walk people's dogs without having contact with them because they're too vulnerable to go outside or to do grocery deliveries. Or like Ground Game LA did a huge fundraiser and was able to fund groceries for some people that needed them delivered. Our government's not doing that for us right now. We should be asking, why are governments not doing that for us right now? Well, because we have a bunch of rich assholes in office who need to not have the safety net of their government office anymore, but also because in LA we're such a close community anyway, right? It's like the same people that work in organizing and community service, and the people that serve folks who don't have any money. There's something very similar about all of us that puts us into the same scene. So I'll see those people at motorcycle rallies, I'll see those people at shows. It's just really interesting because it's definitely a very overlapping Venn diagram of like four or five circles of people who all just kind of end up being the same ones. Like, all of those people should run for office. We should elect all of them. We should campaign for them. We should canvass.
I would love to run for mayor, be elected mayor, fire everyone in City Hall, and hire all my friends. That would be the goal, because then I'd be I'm only running because I don't really want to work. And I want to, like, not have to worry about bills.
But you could do, like, a presidential run where you just, like, travel to all these different countries and shake hands with his babies like Garcetti did. So that'd be cool.
Yeah. Now that you're home, you have pets, you have a couple of dogs. How do they like having you home?
So I have two Terrier Jack Russell mixes. They're both rescues, and they're both very special. Vinny, I think, likes it less, probably. I think Vinny likes to have some secluded time to himself. Oh, Vinny is a 5-year-old Jack Russell mix, and his full name is Vin Scully, but we call him Vinny with an IE. He's dope, but he licks the sky a lot, and he throws up a lot. He's definitely a little neurotic, and I think he likes time away. And then we thought it would be best for him, because he was getting grumpy, to get him a little sister when we moved to this place in July. And so now we have she's currently 11 months and hidden in my sweatshirt, little Jack Russell Terrier mix who thinks that everything that moves is a threat and screams at it with the most impossibly high pitch. But most of the time she just sleeps like a baby, like nuzzling my neck with her head hidden in my hair. I think she likes it. Right now all I see is her little nose sticking out of my sweatshirt, so she's as cute as can be. My Instagram's full of her. I really like it. I don't know how they feel. I think that during the day they go crazy when we're not here. She, like, cries anytime I'm not near her. So, like, I can't pee by myself. If I shut the door to pee, she barks until I open it to let her in. And because I just don't want her barking, we live in this, like, 1920s place that has horrible internet waves being able to penetrate the walls. That doesn't work, but her voice carries like crazy, and we can hear, like, when people are walking down the halls upstairs, it sounds like they're walking down the halls in our place.
Sure.
And so I'm sure they absolutely hate having Ruth here right now.
They know when the mail's here, when you get a package, I'm sure.
I'm more afraid. Well, I put a ring up, so we all know when we get a package now. But yes, you can tell from the dogs. I'm more afraid of what's going to happen when we have to transition back to real life, because they've spent so much time with us now where, like, we don't leave. And they're seeming to get restless. Like, she'll wake up every day. She likes to sleep till, like, 11. And then she'll get up and she'll start screaming at me. Like, I need to go for a walk. Take me for a walk. And I'll take her for a walk, and she will bark at everything, and she has the highest pitch bark, but she'll bark at everything that moves, like the leaves, the grass blades, anything. And she goes the whole time running and, like, the whole time. So they're getting bored, I think. I think at some point
they love it, though.
You think so?
Yeah, they love the room.
I mean, she's stoked. I think Vinny at some point is just like, could you guys leave me alone? I want to go, like, masturbate or something. Leave me. I'm good.
He does his own thing, you know?
He would like to do his own thing. He cannot anymore.
I mean, I get it, you know?
Totally. You and him are...
Yeah, simpatico.
Yeah.
We're both from the island of Misfit Toys, for sure.
But, like, me and Ruth, super attached.
I'm all about the isolation, you know?
Yeah, well, this is AJ's perfect world. If we never had to go back to normal, he'd be fine. The only thing that sucks is we both have immunocompromised people in our family, and we both also have people that are like highly susceptible. Little known feat, AJ's great grandma has lived 102 so far.
102.
She's a fucking champion.
Too bad. Who is the one that used to say happy birthday to people? That oh, Willard Scott of the Today Show. He used to wish people over 100 happy birthday.
She would have got two already.
Ooh, she's ready. She's a champion, but I'm not very close with my family. I'm very close with AJ's family, both sides, and I think that's probably the biggest challenge is that we can't go see anyone we love. I am very close with my maternal grandmother. And she's of the age range. And then I have an uncle who I'm also close with, also on that side, who has about half a lung left after having a congenital defect. And then he smoked, what's it called when you, emphysema? He had really bad emphysema. And then he got cancer. So he's on like a low-dose radiation pill forever. So, and has such limited lung capacity already that, like, I can't go see my grandma because I know... So my grandma's like the working poor. She goes and takes care of elderly folks who need caregivers in home for the state. And they haven't given her any protective care. There's no protective equipment. She has no face mask. She's over 70. And she's going and taking care of folks who have like Alzheimer's but are still in their homes. Who are also super susceptible. So I'm really worried about her. I'm really worried about visiting her. I would love to see her. I think the thing that tears me apart the most and that if I could like convince anybody to stay home for is if you love somebody who is susceptible, they die in a room without windows by themselves. You can't be there. It's not like anything we've seen before. They have to go be isolated and we don't even have an option to be like, well, you're really sick. Why don't you waive that, right? It's like, well, no, you might get better. But we don't know until you die. And so the idea of like my grandma or my uncle or Grandma Pat having to go through that just devastates me. And that's why like I'm cool with staying home and understanding that it's a really big impact if AJ is called to go into work. He was working until Friday. He mixes commercials. There's a lot of equipment that he doesn't have access to at home necessarily at the time. Like we just weren't set up necessarily, but I think that's what everybody's struggling with. Like, nobody knew. So we've had that same situation with school and stuff where, like, I had to go in on Monday after I got home from New York to pick up client files because there was just no other way to do it. But we didn't know if I was exposed yet or not. We're hoping not. School knew I traveled. We don't have any symptoms. Now we're way past that. But, like, AJ going into work every day last Friday, there was six other people and two assistants that came in. They all touched the same door handles. There's not somebody there cleaning up, you know? And the idea that every time he has to go in and do that, we have to put ourselves on quarantine for at least 14 days because we have people in our family who will die if we expose them. That's really terrifying. And I'm really struggling with employers who are making their employees do that when they're not truly essential services. Like, figure out a fucking way to not do that to somebody else because how would you feel if it was your family? And that's ultimately, I think, what this whole virus has shown us is we're so interconnected. We're so reliant on our unskilled labor in this country. We are so reliant on being able to have healthcare, and millions of us don't, right? Like, Trump doesn't want to open enrollment periods right now. I suppose he's probably going to go back on that soon because there's just no way. We've never seen unemployment numbers like this. But so many people who had healthcare previously are now unemployed. They can't get unemployment insurance because the system's so backed up. They're waiting for those checks they've promised. But, like, in the meantime, rent was due today. So I think there's going to be, like, a lot of frustration. And if we don't figure that out, what are those folks going to do? They're going to go back to work because it's the only way you can support yourself. But if we do that, we kill people. So I think it's really, really important that we kind of send the message home that it's not me, it's not you. Although I'm hearing reports that, you know, people in their 20s and 40s are the ones being most affected in the U.S. So maybe that message isn't even right. We don't have enough testing to know. All we know is there is something that is running rampage in our society and it is fucking up a lot of people. And we don't know who because we can't test, but we know that like 25% of people are carriers. And if you're so selfish as to think that because you're okay, it doesn't matter, like, there's a reason we have a game called 10 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. You know? Like, it gets to everybody. Oh, whatever.
66 degrees of Kevin
Bacon. So I'm really good with stuff like that.
I mean, you know, it's...
6 degrees of Kevin Bacon is totally what I meant.
I know this.
10 gave us space.
I know this. The coronavirus was not at Harley's or Corbin Bowl or the Mermaid. I know that for sure.
For sure.
Because we were all there. You know, it was like,
I got home the day after the closure happened, and I was like, what the fuck were we doing? Like, we are such assholes. We should not have gone out.
Yeah. But...
but in fairness, we didn't know if we were all going to die the next day.
In like, fairness,
you might never see your friends again.
In fairness, and until I had an idea to do this, I don't see people that are my friends anymore. I'm a very solitary person, like Kramer, I guess, you know.
Or AJ.
Yeah, actually. You know, it's like I'm a very solitary person, and I'm fine with if I want to go home and sit there and not go out, or I want to go out 365 days to 365 shows to see if I can do it. I have that choice. I don't have the choice anymore. Yeah. And so I think
that was definitely like how that felt that first weekend. Like, oh, you can't go to school anymore? Well, fuck you. I want to go to school now. You can't tell me I can't go. But also the really cool thing is we ride motorcycles, and that's about the best social distancing you could ever have. So there still is a sense of community if you can find people who are free to go out with you and aren't sick. Put on a helmet, stay 6 feet away, and you're good.
Exactly.
And you're protected. But yeah, the day after the Mermaid, I was like, fuck.
Well, it was great.
It was so fun.
And it was fun, and I think we all needed to at least end on a high note before we realized
die.
That we...
Well,
no,
dying.
Not die, but
dying,
before we couldn't go out anymore.
I saw Sharky posted this thing. I actually FaceTimed with him like 2 days ago because of it, but he posted a thing that was like, hey guys, check in with your extrovert friends. We're not okay. We're used to seeing people every day. Like, that's where we get our lifeblood, you know? And so I saw it and sent a message. And I was like, hey, buddy, I'm an extrovert too. This is really hard, right? Like, I just want to go, like, make friends with all my neighbors. Like,
I'm fucking thriving, man.
AJ is thriving. He's like, he's just, like, doing body weight workouts all day before work, after work, in breaks, and then he works, and then he's stoked.
I mean, it sounds like you two have adjusted somewhat. The dogs have adjusted somewhat, so you're doing okay.
Yeah.
We are. I think the greatest thing that happened since this whole thing happened, I was part of a group of students who petitioned my school to ask them to change the grading system. I go to like a third tier law school. I go to Southwestern, which is great for making worker bees. I think we do a lot of things really well, but we're definitely not like a top ranked school. And so the top ranked schools were all doing that. And so I wrote them and was kind of like, well, hey, people that get into top ranked schools can always get a break. The people that are going to be most affected by this are going to be the poor working class students who we happen to attract at Southwestern, because we say that we're building a way to kind of knock down the barrier that there is to get into law school. Like, there's a lot of people who don't have any lawyers in their families that go to my school. I'm the first person in my immediate family to graduate from college. And I didn't do that until I was in my 30s. And I'm definitely the first one to go to law school. And so there's a lot of us who otherwise wouldn't have gotten into law school had we not had this opportunity. But on that, we also come with learning disabilities. We come with other challenges that you don't see at more elite schools, right? Like, we're not from super privileged families for the most part. There's some. But for the most part, like, most of us are very working class and have a lot of people maybe living in our houses, or this is the first time we've ever experienced something like this, and then somebody in our house gets sick, and instead of being able to focus on school, we now have to go do deliveries because we have to make sure that we can pay the mortgage or whatever, the rent or whatever. Like, I'm super lucky. And by lucky, I mean I was able to qualify to take out a horrendous amount of student loans that I will never be able to afford, because I want to do public interest law, which essentially helps people who can't afford to pay for a lawyer. I'll be under these loans for the rest of my life. But on the same note, thank God we have fucking loans right now, because if my loans hadn't come in the beginning of January for the semester, I don't know how I'd pay rent right now. I am not worrying about paying my rent. And that is like the best feeling in the whole world, as somebody who, even when I worked and was on my own and made six figures and was successful, worried that any day it could go away because I was raised in a poor working class family. And so it always felt like an accident that I found myself in these positions where I made decent wages and didn't have debt and all these other things, right? And so when I decided to go back to school, because I was afraid those were just like luck of the draw situations and not something that I could guarantee myself for the rest of my life, I took out an enormous amount of of student loans. Right now, I'm, I think, at 156K. I'm about halfway through, and I have substantial scholarship, but I have to pay for my living expenses because I'm an older student returning, and I've been on my own since I was 15, so I have to be able to pay my fucking rent, and they'll pay my tuition up to like 100%, but they won't pay my rent. So I still have to take out living expense loans, and those start with their APR the day you take them out. They're not like undergrad loans, right? Sure. Graduate loans the day you take them out. So I have 156K accruing at whatever it's accruing. Thank God it's currently paused. but if we didn't have that, I don't know how we would pay rent right now. I mean, I know AJ is working and he can pay his half, but how would I pay mine?
To wrap this up, very simply, maybe not simply, but let's say... I'm sorry.
We're rapping, Ruth. We're rapping.
Have you been getting enough treats lately, puppy?
Ruth doesn't. She's not food motivated.
Silence.
She's the hardest to train because she does not care about food at all. She wants love and affection. Unlike
my
me.
Cat, which is as big as this dog, and my other dog, which is as big as that dog, but they're friends. What do you? Look forward to or hope for the rest of the year. I say the rest of the year because even though we're really April, it's like time stopped. I actually thought today was Thursday. It's Wednesday.
That's true. First. I couldn't do this tomorrow.
I don't know what day of the week it is anymore because it doesn't matter.
It doesn't.
Every day is a Saturday, really.
It's true.
So what do you say for the...
I'm really looking forward to being off quarantine. I really, really hope our classes are back in session in person next semester. Like, even if we don't make it through the summer and if we have to quarantine for the summer, fine, whatever. But, like, if we could get back to normal by fall, that'd be dope. I'm also, I have an externship this summer where I'm supposed to be working for a federal judge, and I'm still waiting to hear if that's even going to be possible because one of the things we saw with all the schools was, like, we weren't really ramped up to go into virtual learning, right? We don't have access to our client files, which is why I had to go in and pull the actual hard client file to take with me to work. As they're getting skilled up, and they've done an amazing job getting skilled up in such a short amount of time, but there's definitely issues with the learning situation, and I'm spending a lot, or I'm taking out a lot of loans to go to school, and I would really like to be able to go get the full utility of what that entails, which is a full library and professors who have studied and practiced and done everything else. Like, it's really interesting to have this happen during law school. I can't imagine being a third year, not only missing my graduation, which, like, breaks my heart for them because I know how bad it felt to miss that competition. I can't imagine 3 years of work to not be able to show everybody, like, hey, I made the sacrifice. I didn't go to shows. I didn't see my family. I didn't do any of the fun stuff. Come celebrate the hard work. And now I'm legally empowered to help people, right? Like, I can't imagine that disappointment. But really excited to get back to school, finish that last year and get out there, but also really interested in kind of how we can help people and how we're building out these kind of mutual aid networks through attorneys who are interested in helping people, in activists that are interested in helping. Like, we're building databases right now that are just resources of people willing to do that work for free. I'm excited to see, you know, my politics are obviously very leftist, but I'm a huge democratic socialist supporter, and I think that capitalism has really failed my generation. I'm not a communist. I don't think, like, I'm not the type of Russian scare that everybody worries about, a red scare that everybody worries about that. But I do think that we have a responsibility to each other to make sure that everybody has a quality of life that's decent. Nobody should be punished for something they haven't done in such a way that, like, they're homeless on the streets. Like, that just seems crazy to me. And I think if anything, we've learned in this how absolutely interconnected we are with immigrants, with the people that we've scapegoated over the course of the last 4 years, with low-wage workers who we say are unskilled. Like, obviously you're skilled. You're the people sustaining our fucking life right now. The only people making sure that we have food to eat, like, and that it gets to us. We are so unappreciative of those things in daily life, and if nothing else, maybe this will make us recognize how much we rely on each other as a society and why it matters that you pay taxes so that we have good schools, even if you don't have kids, or so that you can ride down roads, like I do at way too fast without worrying about hitting a pothole that's going to kill me because I pay taxes. Like, we are reliant on each other, but we need to remember that the government is a body that we developed to protect ourselves. And if they are not doing the job for us, they have no authority over us, and fucking revolt and find something that works for everybody, because this bullshit of leaving so many Americans behind in a situation like this, where we have a leader that some idiots decided it would be better to have a businessman run our country. Like, this is what happens when you have a businessman run our country. He decides that resources should be up-priced and everybody should compete with them as states to get them, instead of looking at people as individuals who need help. And, like, understanding that, like, one life is too many lives. That's not your fucking decision. Get us the resources we need to be able to have a life that is worth living, and to make it – there should not be billionaires in this country. It's fucking repugnant. Every person who is a billionaire should go back to being a millionaire and get the rest of their money. It needs to be redistributed. We need a way that we can sustain healthcare that is not based on a scarcity model, where we can then start selling personal protective gear to employee workers who are risking their lives to fucking save our families for the highest dollar. It's just fucking stupid. And until people, like, realize that, I don't know how we get out of this. Quarantine! Quarantine!